Soundtrack Radio, bringing soundtracks to life. The Halloween Museum.
Next this evening on Soundtrack Radio, real life stories of ghostly significance as we step inside the confines of the Halloween Museum. The Halloween Museum. First, we're going to have a quick story about a real life ghostly situation. A real life situation to be feared. It involves Mary, and it's a modern day Cinderella style scenario. Here's what happened. Mary works as a maid in a gigantic manor house owned by her two sisters in Surrey. Her two sisters are management consultants for a company which has been contracted by the New Labour government to run training schemes for the underemployed. And the families cut from the proceeds have been more than generous enough to buy a sumptuous country manor in Surrey. But for Mary, the story hasn't been as much of a fortunate one. Whilst her two sisters are rolling in it, one family tradition has always been the family money fight held every New Year's Eve. She has not been endowed with the same success, however. Early into her 20s, she attempted to open her own hair salon in Reading, but it failed after she was sued for leaving too many knots in customers' hair. One particularly knotted woman from Slough tried to claim £20,000 in damages. So Mary, after being left with no finances and substantial debts after the out-of-court settlement in 2006, she found herself unemployed and with no prospects, as she hadn't taken a single qualification in her life. Primary school records indicate that she'd even failed her swimming badges. Her sisters and family were not at all predisposed to generosity, and they never had been. So they steadfastly refused to give any of their new incoming wealth to aid Mary. Instead, they offered her a job within the house as a maid, so that she could earn her keep. And if this were not bad enough, as the family were far too mean and financially possessive to hire more employees around the house to do a range of duties, Mary found herself having to do literally everything. Every single household chore. Her duties ranged from everything including doing the washing up, cleaning the soot out from under gas fires, to rearranging the snooker balls on the family table into the right order. But while she was only contracted to work a 12-hour day, she found that on most days, she could barely get her work done within 16 hours. So after making her own bed every night, she fell into it exhausted, weeping tears into her pillow which she would have to wipe down the next morning. But Mary was diligently saving up her money. She had in the back of her mind a fun night out in a Reading nightclub, where she might meet a boy and break away from the hell of the place. It was this thought and her rather flimsy plan that kept her going throughout all of the hellish hours of drudgery, where the clock actually seemed to go backwards rather than forwards. But then it was because it actually did. The thing was an old antique grandfather clock, passed down from the family's Victorian descendants, and it had developed a fault where the minute hand actually did go backwards. But it was worth far too much moolah to introduce it to the tip. Mary's plan was only to earn enough money to afford one night out in a Reading nightclub. And by the end of October 2008, she was nearly there. With just one more pitiful wage packet from another week of hellish mansion upkeep, she would be free for a few short hours to go out and wave her stuff around with the local Reading lads and enjoy a promiscuous night of it. That week finally came in the beginning of November, and in the days before, she was so excited that she could barely concentrate on her demanding jobs, and that would be her undoing. She was due to go out on the Friday night, but it was on her grueling shift on the Thursday that she made the error that would cost her her few hours of weekend freedom for the following night. One of her many, many jobs, she has 103 different duties to be exact, was to sort the rubbish according to type for the local recycling requirements. This meant that strictly no paper content should end up in the plastic bin and so on. But that morning, there had been a particularly savage amount of junk mail offering this and that and the other, shoved through the letterbox, and as soon as her sisters saw the pile, they wanted it binned out of their faces immediately. And that is what Mary, who was excited about her forthcoming night out, did. And then she went straight back to her other duties. But what she had failed to notice was the tiny plastic insert that this sort of rubbish mail uses to show the address. She had filed it in the paper bin, but the little plastic insert contained within the little piece of useless mail would go on to cause the most trouble. When Mary woke up on Friday morning, she was immediately excited about her night out, which was now right in front of her. But when she went down, she didn't see the same dirty kitchen she always saw, but the same dirty kitchen with two of her sisters in it. There was also a councilman drinking a cup of tea. It was the incorrectly binned junk mail with the little clear plastic insert. She had filed it in the paper bin, when in fact the correct classification for it should have been miscellaneous crap, as it contained both paper and plastic, and therefore it was difficult to decide exactly what kind of crap category it belonged in. As it turned out, the council had been doing their annual recycling inspection only the previous day in a bid to find out who in the local area was attempting to flout the council's recycling policies by trying to bin the crap in bins it didn't belong in. Mary, whose head was more full of fantasies about her forthcoming Friday night out than her immediate job in hand, which was correct crap analysis and placement in rightful bin, had inadvertently done just that. Now she and the family were about to be punished. The council were very strict on recycling offences. It meant a humbling fine, as it was the environment that was at stake, and once this planet is gone, you don't get another one. The levy was £2,000, and Mary, whose family had always been neurotic about money, of course, made sure that this money was paid back only through the sanctioning of her wages. In about 2012, she reckons, she might be able to afford another night out.
Halloween Museum.
Well, this is the Halloween Museum, and I've got with me two people now. Amanda, and I believe you've brought a friend with you. Why have you brought a friend with you?
Well, my friend here, Jane, is going to tell you a little story about her friend, Belinda.
So it's kind of an experience that she's had, and she wants to come and talk about it, help you out a little bit.
Yes, she's an expert in her field, you could say.
Now,
would you like to meet Jane? Shall I introduce you, Jane?
I'm not against meeting people, so why not? Yes, hello.
All right. Jane.
All right, yeah, how are you doing? Yeah, is this the first time you've been on the radio?
Lovely.
It is, yeah. It is lovely. I think it's lovely, to be honest. It's a very easy job, you know. It's anyone could do it, and that's what I'm telling you now. You know, there's no preparation that goes into these things whatsoever. You do believe that?
Oh, yeah, of course. Oh, it must be easy, Gav.
I mean, you've written your story down on a piece of paper, haven't you? That's all you did.
Actually, it wasn't. It was actually back of an old bar mat.
Back of an old bar mat.
Because
it's a very simple story, very simple facts, isn't it?
Yeah, well, but, you know, my mate couldn't be here today. She's had to go and resit a restart, as they say.
A restart? Now, what's this? And it's another Halloween story again,
isn't
it?
Well, do you want me to tell you a little bit about my mate?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, she's had a scary experience. That's what you told me.
Yeah. Well,
but this is meant to be a show about ghost stories, and we're getting another of these. I can't believe this.
Oh, this is well scary, Gav. Wait until you hear this.
Are you sure this one is scary?
This is going to blow your mind. Weren't you scared by the last one? It terrified me.
I must admit, I was a little bit.
It put the willies up me, I can tell you.
Well, the only problem is, I'm in the wrong gender. That couldn't happen to me. So I was about half as scared as I should have been.
Ooh. I'm telling you, I had the runs.
Okay, well, yeah. Okay, let's hear this. Right, what's happened?
This is about my mate.
Real life?
Yeah.
Yeah, real life.
Her name's Belinda. She's 22 years of age. And she was working as a cleaner in a cake factory in West Luton. As part of her job description, she had to hoover up all the unwanted cake crumbs all day.
That was her job?
Yeah.
To do that?
But it was a disciplinary offence to attempt to eat any of it, as it was considered a violation of health and safety.
Well, there's no perks in that job whatsoever, then, is it?
Nah, but one day, after talking to some of her friends who were claiming housing benefit and income support, she realised that she'd be better off financially if she was claiming benefits. So, the next day, she went into work and stuffed her mouth full of cake crumbs off the floor. Lo and behold, she was brought in for disciplinary action the next day.
So she was trying to sabotage her own job. She realised she's doing like a lot of people do, and she realises that, in fact, you might be better off in benefits than working a small minimum wage job.
So she had to get herself all these crumbs down her throat, like, you know, and she'd been warned. So, as expected, she got the sack.
That's what she wanted. So she was playing the system.
Well, that meant she was free to claim her benefits. Ooh. What she didn't realise is that benefits no longer go on forever. And that she would have to face an horrible restart. Oh, fucking hell.
So what you're saying is you don't just go on benefits and then they go on. Because, you know, I'm going to let you into something here that I was, you know, I might be let off the radio soon. And I was actually thinking of, you know, going on benefits, maybe for 6 months or so, watching Diagnosis Murder every day and just working from home. So
you should be all right for 6 months, but any longer than 6 months, mate, and they'd be kicking you up the jacks proper.
But why 6 months? Why have they set that?
After 6 months, you get placed on a job scheme. And the scheme she was placed on, it was a voluntary scheme. Funnily enough, age concern were running for it, but it was for the original cake factory that she was working for. But she's getting less money and no perks, no holidays, nothing.
So what are you saying? You're saying that one of the options, you have to take a voluntary job. You're saying, and they even call it a voluntary job.
They call it voluntary, but it's not voluntary, because if you don't do it, your benefits are cut off. How voluntary is that?
But I thought you got paid just to be unemployed until you got a job. What about the amount of benefits you get? Do you get, you know, if you start working for something as part of this benefits thing, do you get any more money?
No, not at all. No, in fact, what happened with her is she was offered this voluntary position. When she got offered this job, well, offered, forced to go and work for the cake factory through age concern, she refused, of course, as you would, same person, thinking, oh, well, you know, benefits will carry on, something better will come along. What did they do? They sanctioned her benefits for 2 months, which means bringing her wages down even more.
To roughly what she was getting before, something like that?
To bagger all, mate, bagger all. So there you go.
Well, that is
Don't
a scary
eat cake
story.
Crumbs, or think, you'll be in trouble.
I really find that quite a scary story. So you, by claiming benefits, you may be forced to work, but you may not get any more money than the actual benefits. So it's practically slavery.
Yeah, I suppose you could call it that. Yeah, I think they used to call it work fair, didn't they? No, I just think it's unfair, but, you know, who am I?
Well, that is very interesting. I've got to say, that really is quite a scary story. And it happened last year. I can't believe it. This is the Halloween Museum with the real scary story experience.
Poor cow, be made out with a few cake crumbs now.
Halloween Museum. Welcome back to the Halloween Museum, playing spooky songs and reading spooky stories. But Amanda's still here in the studio, and it's
Hello,
actually
darling.
Yes,
Yeah, you don't need to say hello anymore because you've been here for the last 40 minutes. But that's okay, because what we're doing here, we're just looking at some alternative things in real life that are scary, because that's the theme of the show, that Halloween has to be scary every year.
I think every day is scary if you look at it hard enough.
That's what I mean. I mean, you know, as if we haven't got enough fear and problems in life without having a day at the end of October where we have to deliberately make ourselves scared. It's just madness, isn't it, really?
Yes, it's very strange. It does improve the sale of pumpkins, though,
you know,
of course.
What I don't get is why are ghosts scary as well? Because, you know, they're supposed to be like, you know, people who have died. Yeah, they're dead, but they've been people alive in their life. And are people who are normally alive, are they scary just for being people, being existent?
Some are very scary.
Well, yeah, that's true, but they're just saying they're all ghosts just because it's a ghost.
I'll be honest with you, in all my years in this game, I will always say, I'll reiterate it again this evening, even though it is Halloween, I'm a lot more scared of the living than the dead.
That's what I mean. It's just on its head, really, isn't it? The ghosts are like, you know, they're no problem. They can go through things, you know, supposedly. So if one wanted to come and punch you and cause trouble, you know, how's it going to do that? It's going to come at you at warp speed or something, you know. Well, there are poltergeists.
Even a poltergeist, they're really not that interesting, are they?
Yeah, they can throw things around, throw the weight around a bit, and you can't evict them. You can't just say, you know, you haven't been paying rent and, you know, can you go and haunt somewhere else, you know, because you haven't got a haunting
license.
Well,
you can exorcise them, though, can't you?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, actually. I don't know what you can do. But what I do know is that they are things that perhaps don't exist, perhaps, or maybe they do, I don't know. But the thing is, we don't have many problems with them in our real lives, and why is that scary? But stories like the one in this newspaper today, I don't know if you want me to tell you about it, it's something I found for the show.
Let's see.
Yeah, well, okay. Well, it's about Jack. He was a file sharer. You know about that, don't you?
Yes.
Yeah, well, what he did, he first got his computer in 1999. That was when Napster first came out, obviously.
A good year for computers. Oh, vintage.
Great year, wasn't it? Because on this Napster program, you could download almost any song in the world because people used to share their files. So you could download anything you wanted for free. It just worked. You said, oh, I want Michael Jackson with Thriller.
So when you say people download their files, somebody originally had actually bought the thing.
Yeah, somebody probably bought a CD and then ripped it or something, you know.
So in a way.
And then they shared it across the network.
So in a way.
Across the world.
The person had already been paid. The artist had been paid.
Yes, but not for the numerous copies that followed on Napster. Well, Jackie was a prolific file sharer, it said here. First, he got a computer only to keep in touch with his pals, but then he discovered the program called Napster, where you could download anything on the face of the earth. As a result of that, he said that originally in 1999, he binned all of his CDs from that moment on and began downloading furiously.
Well, soon. I suppose you would, because it saves some money. And living in such small apartments as most of us do these days, you can see the logic in somebody not wanting to have
a massive CD
or record collection. You could actually say that he was doing it because his environment had been made small.
Yeah, right, yeah. In fact, he even had this small room where he could move his fully extend his arm out and touch his toilet, and then he could fully extend his other arm out and touch his cooker.
So basically, being a poor man, the authorities feel he has no rights to listen to music. Is that what you're saying?
Well, not without paying for it, apparently, because what he did, he started downloading furiously. In fact, he became one of the most prolific downloaders in the UK.
Oh, yes.
He actually was one of the biggest ones. He not only did he download, he continuously shared his massive collection for upload. He had one of the biggest collections, and it was over 10,000 illegally gotten songs.
He didn't just borrow songs. He lent songs too.
Well, that's what it's like, isn't it? When you're sharing on a file sharing network, what you do, you download your songs and then it stays in a directory, usually, unless you move it, and then all those songs are available for anybody else, and that's how the collection grows, you see.
So before we had this technology, say I had Thriller by Michael Jackson on 33. Say I lent it to one friend, then got it back, lent it to another, then lent it to another, then lent it to another. Yeah. Would that make me liable?
That's a big difference, you see, because what happens there is when you lend it to somebody, they don't get to keep it when they give it back to you. Whereas with file sharing, they get to keep the file forever. Anybody you copy it to?
Most people used to have cassette recordings.
Yeah, they used to do that for each other. But even then, The quality was a bit ropey, wasn't it? You know, sometimes the tape would snag and Michael Jackson's would sound more like this.
So it was okay when technology wasn't so good. It wasn't such a problem for the artist. What's...
See, that's the thing. It's just a scale thing. It's a power by numbers. It's like an invasion of insects. It's like, you know, if one breeds, you get a whole load, like you get another, one lays an egg, you get a whole other 10,000 insects, all with eggs and things. And in the past, you know, all you could do is give them a ropey old tape copy, and now it's gone that you can actually practically give them the studio, you know? So, well, he, anyway, getting back to it, he was one of the absolute biggest downloaders of music in the country, and of course he was one of the biggest uploaders because he had the biggest collection, and he had over 10,000 of these songs. But then in 2008 he was targeted by the copyright mafia, and he was soon facing a claim for damages of around £15 million.
That is a jaw-dropping amount.
Now, I tell you what was happening there, the record company wanted at least £150,000 in damages per illegal song, and they were multiplying that by 10,000.
Oh, that is more, absolutely, you know? Crazy.
So he was facing that, and they were serious about it, you know. And that was what, if the case had gone to court, actually ended up in the court, he would have faced damages for over £50 million, and it would have been a legal thing. He would have been in debt for longer than for more pounds than he's ever breathed oxygen breaths in, or something stupid like that.
So basically, unless you're Bill Gates, who in fact must sort of be somebody who's very capitalistic, who is selling and taxing people by using his systems at every opportunity, you'd have no way to pay for the music you've downloaded.
No, it wouldn't be possible. And it's kind of what happens in America, because you have the film. Somebody was sharing the film Are We Done Yet? And they were done for about $300,000. And that's a real story.
My Lord.
Yes. So there you go. That was what was happening to him. So, but what happened in the end was he had an out-of-court settlement offer, which we can't reveal the amount of.
Oh, yes.
Because it's undisclosed and it's all under wraps.
But and apparently, how did he pay?
We don't know how much it was exactly, but it must have been quite a fortune, because shortly after he received it, he sold all of his possessions in the flat, and he moved into his parents' loft.
That was so sad.
Yes. In fact, he was sharing his loft with his brother, who had also lost his job.
Actually, mentioned something about wallpaper here. He sold his own wallpaper.
Yes, this is interesting. Yeah. Going into a bit of detail about some of the things he had to sell, he sold literally everything, even down to the wallpaper on the walls. And he said that he did this by he got one of those £20 of his slightly remaining money on one of those innovative shopping networks or whatever.
Oh yes,
and he it's like it's called like a miracle pill. That's the name of the product, Miracle Peel Pro. And what happens is, it gets very carefully in between the wallpaper and the wall, and it can peel it off. It can make
fantastic.
It smooth as a newspaper.
Did he keep the miracle peel?
Well, I don't know, but I would guess not, I guess.
Oh.
I mean, the story wouldn't be quite complete, would it, if he did?
Oh.
So that's what he sold, even his wallpaper.
Yes. Oh. But at least he had the music. Mm.
There was a slight other twist as well, which is that his 7-year-old nephew had been around, and he downloaded a further 5,000, putting the price up even more. And he hadn't even realised he'd done it.
Oh, no.
So sometimes you get trouble just for what somebody else does as well. I mean, that happened to a couple in the New York metropolitan area. It was, in fact, a 7-year-old daughter or something, or a 7-year-old girl who was sued, and the parents had no knowledge of what she was sharing or downloading over their network, over their internet.
Oh, well, they would say that, wouldn't they? It was the cat.
I'm just going to go right to the end of the article now for the final, which it says, because he sold off all his stuff relating to the file sharing and everything, he now doesn't have even a computer to listen to the, or an MP3 player to listen to the songs on, so he hasn't even got a copy of the illegal songs. He did get given a demand by the court not to keep his illegally downloaded MP3s, but even if he had wanted to violate that, he wouldn't have been able to, because obviously he has no computers to do it on. So what's the moral of the story? Don't be one of the unlucky ones to get caught. And if you are, use a better fake screen name that gives no clues about your real identity or address.
Hear, hear.
So is that a scary story for Halloween or what?
Very scary indeed.
I think it really is. Not being facetious, this is the Halloween Museum full of real scary stories from real life.
Halloween Museum.
A horror movie in 60 seconds.
Chad, do you want to be my boyfriend?
Sure, I got nothing else to do. What does it involve?
Come to a party on Saturday night.
Yeah, I'll be there, I'll be square.
In the average teenage house.
What are you doing here?
I'm here to kill you. Surprise!
I was just having some popcorn. You want some?
Where's Chad? He was supposed to be my date tonight.
Maybe he's blown you off.
Oh, you wish.
Again in the average teenage house.
Chad, are you in there?
Yes, he is. Voila!
He's dead!
You're clever for a blonde, but I bet you're not clever enough to escape me.
Chad, are you in there?
Oh, what now? I've got enough on my hands.
What the hell are you doing here, Tina?
I thought Chad had blown you off, so I was gonna ask him out on a date.
He's blown you both off because he's dead. Job done. Finally. Oh, what is it now? I thought I killed you all.
It's the police. Open the hell up.
I'm sick of this. I'm just gonna have to kill myself.
That was a horror movie. Next on BBC One, it's time for Songs of Praise.
The horror movie was written by AJ, starring the voices of Brian Seal, Corinda Hartley, AJ, Vincent Pellicchio, and Paula Rowlands.
The Halloween Museum.
We're back with the Halloween Museum of real-life scary stories and scary people. I'm totally scared, I'm lying. Now, this last story is probably the silliest of the lot, and
what are you talking about? Scary. My name's Jane. This is my story. Please don't rip me.
I thought it was the story of your sister.
Well, we can't both be called Jane, can we? You know, I'm going to tell you this story in the third party because I'm a little bit embarrassed.
Yeah, well, yeah, I would be as well, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you're sure you want to tell this story? You're sure you want to go through with this?
In for a penny, you know, in for a pound, as
well,
they say.
You are, yeah, you are, I suppose. But, I mean, you know, hopefully other people can learn from this experience, you know. Maybe it will warn them about what happened to you.
Yeah,
I don't know.
You know, anything can happen in today's world. Yeah. Basically, what it was is I joined this new revolutionary new blind date service. It's called Takes Two. Have you heard of it?
Well, actually, I have, but you know, I don't know much about them because I've never needed a date.
What it is instead of just having an initial blind date, the selection process in which the blind date chooses the potential partner is through voice only, and the date's identity is only revealed after the choosing.
So it's a blind date?
Proper one. But instead of having your own voice, what you do is you can only communicate with a Stephen Hawking-style voice box. It's basically
a bit extreme,
well,
this.
It's about, you know, sensory deprivation.
So what, they really don't want you to know who it is?
They don't want you to know who it is, what they smell like, what they look like. They
it's
want
just
you to
like
go for the personality.
A total date in the dark. So
it's better than a date in the dark. Because, you know, you see that on telly and it looks a little bit spurious to me. This is the real thing.
So
this
why do you want you to do that? You just want you to sort of chat and see how you would get along and before actually using superficial things to work out.
Well, what I'd heard is that you get a lot of rich fellas using this, you know, that don't want people that are after them for the money. So I thought, bonus.
So they need to check it's the right personality. They want a proper test.
That's what they're looking for. But so, if you're going into it knowing that it's a load of rich blokes, you're onto a winner, aren't you?
So there are people who just want this, and that's why, you know, see, it sounds weird to us, but they've got a plan.
Yeah.
So what you're saying, they've got a plan with this.
Yeah, well, they're looking at personality. It's not about your vital statistics. It's not, you know, I mean, I know I'm fit, you know what I mean? I spent a lot of money on these lovely pappies. So, you know.
I thought you were having me on about this because it seems a bit over the top. No. You can't see, not only can you not see them during the actual dating selection process, you can't see them over the dating weekend, the whole thing, and you can't even hear them.
No, mate, it's absolutely mad. We went to Blackpool for us.
Blackpool.
For us. And you know what?
We wouldn't see the place.
We might as well have been in a black hole.
You couldn't take it. I mean, could you take it off if you're not in the same room as each other?
No. You're wearing a special, like, a headpiece. It covers the whole of your eyes and your nose. And you can only receive sound through these special earpieces that make the Stephen Hawking's kind of sound.
So what the hell was the point in going to Blackpool? You'd have no knowledge. You'd have no experience.
Well, Blackpool's...
like, be locked in a cupboard.
Well, you know, Blackpool's got a lot of places to stay.
Yeah.
It's very reasonable. And it's got a few arcades, you know, for the people who are running it, like, you know what I mean? I think they're like the shoot-em-ups.
Yeah,
and quite so, keen on the fruit machine.
You must have felt pretty apprehensive about this.
Well, I just thought it'd be great, you know, a few days in Blackpool, make this rich, hopefully rich fella. Should be all laughing.
Yeah. So what you did this? You selected. I mean, how did you select the fella? How did you work out who to pick at first to go to Blackpool with?
Well, they do it on a series of questions. But you don't find out anything substantial. You don't find, you know, he doesn't use his real name or anything like that. You know what I mean? I mean, the guy I went on with, apparently, he's only gone because his mates had sent him on a date.
Right. Well, we're going to find out more about who this person is that you actually ended up having a date with.
That. Mate, I'm mortified.
Absolutely mortified. Well, we're going to find out a bit more about why that is. So you went there, you picked this person, you went off on the Blackpool excursion that you couldn't see. Had you been to Blackpool before?
Well, it doesn't really matter. You know, I knew it was windy, so I knew I'd wear permethermal drawers. But apart from that, I was completely open-minded. And I must admit, even though we had a voice like Stephen Hawking's, I fell very hard in love.
Mm. I was going to say, what sort of things did you talk about during your sensory deprivation weekend in Blackpool? I mean, this is...
all kinds of things. A lot of it's very personal. Plenty of sexy chit-chat, you know what I'm saying, about positions and, you know, all that kind of thing.
It didn't feel like having a sort of session with a robot.
Oh, don't be daft. It felt lovely. Oh, yeah. I mean, no, we had a bit of filthy talk and all that. And but it does sound a bit strange and...
you know, this accent.
But, you know, it was all right, you know, it wasn't
too bad.
But
you knew you clicked. You just had this...
Yeah, you know, like a when report.
So it's a bit like when you're, you know, when people do the messaging, when they do the MSN and the Yahoo, and they speak to someone, they don't see them, and it's just text on the screen.
It's the same thing,
but they
really.
Know, but they know, they like the connection they have.
Yeah, of course.
But you must have been, I mean...
You know, he was cracking jokes and everything. He really made me laugh at one stage. One of the... what was it he said? He said, why was the washing machine laughing? I said, I don't know. And he said, because he was taking the wee-wee out of the undies. So you can understand I was crying out laughing at this.
At first I was thinking, you know, you must have been apprehensive about doing the whole sensory deprivation dating experience, you know, for this with this extreme agency. But now surely the apprehension that you felt enjoying this and going along with this must have been towards finding out who he was and being sure of... whether your experience was, in fact, valid.
Well, it was a bit like Quasar, actually. Have you ever played that, the, like, laser game? It was a bit like that, really.
Yeah, I do remember that. It's a good way of spending a day where you've got no radio work whatsoever to do.
So it was a bit like a blind date plus Quasar.
Yeah. So you had this weekend. It was over a Saturday and Sunday, very standard.
Yeah, felt that I've fallen in love. My heart was his. It was an amazing feeling. Until.
Right, so you go back down south and you get to take out the earmuffs and the blindfold, which actually took an hour, didn't it, to take those because they were so tightly held on.
I feel a little bit sick when I recall this, but they took off the apparatus and to my chagrin, it turned out it was my brother Stuart all along. wrong. Oh,
why did he join this agency? Why
he'd done it for a dare, hadn't he? His mates. Oh, I don't know. I felt really sick. I mean, I should have realised when he gave his full name. I should have thought, oh, it's not my brother's name. But it just didn't occur to me, you know.
Unless he, yeah.
Yeah, he went, you know, he went and found out if, you know, he went online, check out if it was illegal, incest and that. And sadly, it is.
So really, you're actually thinking you'd had such a good time.
That we'd at least have a bit of sex. You know what I mean?
Or possibly, but only that. You wanted to salvage something because you thought he was so good.
Yeah.
If you could just put this idea, highly controversial as it is, that the man was your brother, into the back of your mind, that maybe you could... You know, somehow
keep it in the family. Incest is best. That's why it rhymes.
So you wanted, you know, you had this controversial plan. Maybe if I just concentrate on that experience, there might be some way forward. But you found that wasn't to be.
Yeah, mate. Fortunately, it's not very legal, and apparently the authorities frown upon the union of brother and sister. I mean, you know. It's all right to St. Helens. Mm. Why can't we do it here?
St. Helens, well, that's something, that's a whole other programme, isn't it? That we're probably not going to get a chance to go into. Well, it's a very, very sad and shocking and definitely, yes, I'd call that a scary story. So thank you for fulfilling the brief of this programme.
Yeah, I feel like I've been really brave.
Thank you for actually making it live up to the name, the Halloween Museum. But, you know, I actually wish you the very best. Well, okay. After all that, I'm just kind of looking now. Is there a moral to that story? Is there something about it that's to wrap it up?
Well, I'm not sure, really. If you want to cop off with a rich fella, probably don't join Take Two. What can I say? Me and Stuart, got in.
You know what? There is no moral. It was just a very unlucky situation. What is the chances of that? So I would say to anyone who wanted to try sensory deprivation dating, well, the chances of that happening are about one in something very big. So why not go ahead and do it? Because it's not at all likely that. But it happened to you. It really happened. And I can only say I'm sorry. Well, thanks very much for appearing on the programme. Your two stories tonight have been fascinating. Thanks very much.
Cheers, Gav.
And also I'm going to say goodbye to Amanda, who has been trying not to laugh.
Actually, I've been very disturbed by tonight's stories.
I had to reveal that because you have been sitting there with a smirk and a grin on your face. And
well,
I've been trying to control mine,
I've just
really.
Been trying to cover my fear. They do say smile and the world smiles with you, chin up and all that kind of thing. And I've been so scared, worried and anxious this evening that I just felt best to try and keep a chipper outlook on things.
All I can say is it's a good job you're not a reporter for the daily paper or something like that, because unfortunately, though, I think they might listen to the radio. Maybe. So watch out in the red tops tomorrow. It could be an even scarier day. This has been the Halloween Museum. Real life scary stories that are scarier than ghost stories. Ooh, or something.
Featured ideas by AJ and Corinda Hartley, and the voices of AJ and Corinda Hartley, obviously.
Listening to the museum, and just joining us in the room is Tim Longo.
I wish I was on the radio like that guy. It must be the best job in the world. He might get all the women and all the cars.
Oh, don't be stupid, son. Of course he's not rich. He does it out of his basement.
He does?
But the good news is that you can do that too.
Broadcast in my basement?
No, you can broadcast on Soundtrack Radio from your basement.
But I'm only friggin' 5!
It doesn't matter. They'll accept anyone.
Yes, it does!
Calm down.
Anyone?
Yeah.
I can't wait to be my lifelong dream. I'm not going to college now, Dad.
Good call, son. It's a waste of time anyway. Get a real job, son. Go on the radio.
You can do it, little boy.
We're looking for presenters on 3 Soundtrack shows.
3?
Yes, 3. We'll send you a show plan and all you gotta do is record 5 links in MP3 format and send them back to the station.
Yippee!
See you on the air, little boy.
Yes!
What did you do while I was at the bank?
I was just on the radio.
Now you can be a presenter too. Check www.soundtrackradio.com for details.